What did I do? Is it because I did that thing in the bathroom yesterday during my lunch break? Because I didn't know the cameras were in there. What? Huh? Oh, nothing. Never mind. I masturbated at work. A lot. So, ma'am, what did I do? She told me, and I was pissed. Apparently, I was fired because I made a vlog at work. Now, this was back before everyone vlogged, so I guess the weight loss center freaked out when they saw that one of their employees was making strange internet videos at work. When in reality, my vlogging was only promoting their company more. But it was 2009, so I can't hate them for not, you know, being hip to the times. But what I am mad about is the way they handled the situation. Not only did they fire me, they fired all the other employees who were in my vlogs, and that included my mom and my brother, who started working for the company after I did. As I walked out of the office carrying all my belongings, I stopped and stood before my before and after poster. I'm taking this, and when I get famous one day, I'm going to tell everyone that I lost my weight using your arch-rival, Nutrisystem.
Good luck with that,
the corporate office woman yelled. Even though this was one of the worst days of my life, it was a blessing in disguise. It forced me to focus on my YouTube channel, which eventually was successful enough that I could buy my mom a house and spend more than $20 on an outfit at Target. So in closing, I'd like to say thank you to that weight loss center for firing me. Just like when I needed to quit my job as a paperboy for my grandma to explore my options, I needed to leave the world of weight loss to see what else was out there. And what I found was so much better. For that, I'm thankful. And if you'd like to lose weight and get in the best shape of your life, be sure to call 1-800-NUTRISYSTEM. Astral projection. I've always been different, not just in a, wow, that kid is different, did his mom try to shove him down the toilet at prom kind of way, but in a spiritual way. I was never an avid churchgoer, and I don't know the Bible cover to cover, but I've always had a strong connection with God and the spiritual world. When I was a kid, I would just lie on my bed and talk to God for hours. On second thought, maybe I'm schizophrenic. Honestly, that would explain a lot. Anyways, on the night I found out my parents were getting divorced, I lay in bed and cried for hours. I was 9, and the thought of my entire world changing was overwhelming and way too much to handle. I had already eaten all the Nutter Butters in the house, so I resorted to sobbing into my Lion King pillowcase. I felt a hand on my back and a soft, calm voice telling me, "It's gonna be okay." I turned over thinking I would see my mom sitting on the bed next to me, but there was nobody there. I know I should have freaked out, but for some reason, I was okay with the fact that some kind of spirit had just touched me and spoke to me. Thinking back, that was creepy as shit, and I can't believe I didn't piss the bed. A year after that, I started having really intense dreams. I was super close to my paternal grandmother, who had just died. Everyone always said when I grew up, I would look just like her, which was disheartening considering she was a morbidly obese woman who lived in a chair. She literally never got up from her chair during the last 15 years of her life. She had her fridge within arm's grabbing distance, and I'm pretty sure she peed into a big gulp cup. So my future was looking real bright. The night after she died, I had a dream that I was floating outside of my body, and I flew up into the sky. I could actually see myself lying in bed, and I could see my entire neighborhood as I floated away. When I got higher than the clouds, I heard the voice of my grandmother. I turned to look at her, and what I saw was a young woman in her 20s floating next to me with the biggest blue eyes I had ever seen. She had long, flowing hair, and she was wearing a pink baby doll dress. We had a long conversation about life, death, and even how she didn't want me to end up like her. She told me to stay strong and not let anybody get me down. She told me to quit emotionally eating and learn how to deal with my pain by being creative and expressing myself. She said I was destined for greatness, and she would be watching over me every step of the way. When I woke up the next day, I ran into my mom's room and I told her about the dream. I told her what Grandma looked like and how it was like a younger version of herself. My mom started crying and ran to the closet to get something. She grabbed an old photo album and flipped to a picture of my grandmother when she was in her 20s. She looked exactly like I dreamed she did. The big eyes, the long hair, and even the same pink baby doll dress. My mom said that she believed that when we die and go to heaven, our body goes back to when we were the happiest. My grandma chose to go back to her youth, when she wasn't stuck in a chair. From that morning on, I knew that I had some strange connection to the spiritual world. Either that or eating 200 Nutter Butters before sleep caused some seriously fucked up hallucinations. When I was 13, I started having different kinds of dreams. They weren't conversations with dead people, but instead, they were dreams in which I floated around my neighborhood and spied on people. I know, that's creepier than talking to dead people, but trust me, if you're 13 and could snoop on your neighbors, you would. The first experience I had with this was one day after school when I decided to take a nap after watching 3 hours of Saved by the Bell reruns. My family and I had just moved into a new apartment building that weekend, and we hadn't met any of our neighbors. I laid my head back and drifted off pretty quickly. Then I opened my eyes and started noticing that the ceiling was getting closer and closer to my face. I turned around and saw that I was floating outside of my body. I hadn't done this in years. I started panicking. I tried everything I could to get back into my body and wake up, but nothing was working. It was honestly the scariest feeling I had ever had. Well, that and the feeling of going to my school nurse when she made me take off my shirt in front of the whole class to do the scoliosis test. That was traumatizing. One kid asked why my nipples looked so sad. I don't quite know what he meant, but I also kind of know exactly what he meant. As I floated farther away from my body, I decided to just go with it and see where it was going to take me. I went right through the front door like the Kool-Aid Man, except the door didn't blow up into a billion pieces. I just kind of dissolved through it. I floated through my new apartment building and saw some new faces. A blonde lady walking her golden retriever, a young Asian kid riding a scooter, and a gardener obviously looking into a woman's window while she was changing her clothes. My first thought was, what a perv. My second thought was, I can probably float through that window. But I held back and decided to go back into my body. I woke up in a huge sweat and let out a loud gasp. I instantly decided to pretend that the dream was one of those that only felt super realistic. I totally disregarded the possibility that I could have actually floated outside of my body. Ring, ring! I jumped and screamed like a big-titted blonde in a horror movie. Why do phones always ring when I'm already on the edge of freaking the fuck out? I answered it, and it was my mom asking me to come to the car to help her with some boxes. As I walked out the front door, I saw three things that would change my life forever. A blonde lady walking her golden retriever, a young Asian kid riding a scooter, and a gardener looking into a woman's window while she was changing her clothes. This was not a coincidence. This was something bigger. Astral projection, or astral travel, is an interpretation of out-of-body experience that assumes the existence of an astral body separate from the physical body and capable of traveling outside it. Wikipedia. Now, I know this is going to be hard to take in, and I'm sure a lot of you have already started mentally checking out, but trust me, it's not bullshit. If I were bullshitting you, I would write a story about how hard it was being a kid in high school with a 15-inch long penis that kept getting stepped on in the hallway. Although I'm sure that would have made for a way more interesting book. If the term astral projection sounds familiar to you, it's probably because you saw the 2010 horror film Insidious about the kid who could float outside of his body while dreaming. When I saw that movie, I freaked out. I thought I was the only person who had ever experienced such a thing. And it didn't help that the kid in the movie floated down to hell and was enslaved by a pedophile demon that looked like Michael Jackson covered in menstrual blood. I'm surprised I ever slept again. After watching the movie, I went back home and started researching and learned that astral projection was incredibly common. Even some celebrities could do it, like Gary Busey and Shaq. Okay. I'm aware those aren't the best examples of people to trust, but hey, it's something. That night I lay in bed and tried my hardest to float outside of my body. I thought maybe I could go and hang out with other floaters and talk about how cool we were because we could watch other people sleep. Who knows, maybe I could even become friends with Gary Busey and Shaq. Unfortunately, nothing happened. A week later I went to sleep, not expecting anything, and of course, that's when it happened. I had the most intense astral projection of my life. I was taking a nap in my garage, which, believe me, is not as weird and depressing as it sounds. My garage had been converted into an office and had a sick-ass couch that was so comfortable, I could imagine becoming my fat, dead grandma and living on it. As I drifted off to sleep, my eyes began to open, but this time I couldn't float outside of my body. Something was holding me back. I looked around the room, and I saw a black figure standing by the door. It didn't have a face, and it didn't have much of a shape. It was more like the essence of a person. I could hear it breathing, and it started getting closer and closer to me. I tried everything I could to wake up, but nothing was working. My heart was pounding, and my stomach was churning like I was going to throw up. The figure got closer and closer, but I still couldn't see its face. Then it put its hand, which looked more like a claw, on my chest and started pushing down. It felt like the presence was trying to get inside of my body. Finally, I woke up and I jumped off the couch. I ran out of my garage and into my house. I knew that what just happened was not good and was way too real to be a nightmare. I decided to do more research, and what I found was truly frightening. Many people who astral project have run into similar situations where they've encountered an angry spirit that wanted to harm them. Some even say that the spirit tried to jump into their body while they were away from it. The advice was that you could will yourself back into your body when you start to feel that you're threatened. Now this all sounded like the scariest shit in the world, and I never wanted to sleep again, but I knew that eventually the Red Bulls would wear off, and I would have to face my demons, literally. A few nights later, as I fell asleep in my bedroom, I decided that if any dark figures tried to mess with me, I would just will myself back into my body and everything would be okay. What's the worst that could happen? I get possessed by some crazy demon, murder my entire family, and upload a confession on my YouTube channel? As if. So I fell asleep, and once again my eyes opened. I was floating. I was outside of my body and floating in my room. I had left the TV on, and there was a rerun of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives playing. If that spirit was to come back, hopefully the image of Guy Fieri choking down a 10-inch hoagie would scare him away. Just then, I felt something was off. I was beginning to float outside of my room, but I looked back and saw the dark figure standing next to my body. I started panicking, and I felt my heart racing. I tried to close my eyes and will myself back into my body, but it wasn't working. The figure looked up at me. This time it had a face. It wasn't human. It was almost animalistic. I decided to get up as much courage as I could, and I floated toward the figure as fast as I could. I ran my spirit body into him and tackled him to the ground. It turned into a long, violent battle between me and this dark, cold mass. Then suddenly I woke up. I was sweatier than I had ever been in my entire life. Even sweatier than when I found out that zero-calorie butter spray is actually 1,000 calories per bottle. Those fucking liars. This had gotten out of hand. I didn't want to ever astral project again. I'm not as strong as Gary Busey or Shaq. After reading up on people who have had similar experiences, I learned that to avoid astral projecting, all you have to do is tell yourself, as you're falling asleep, that you aren't going to let it happen. So I started doing that. Slowly but surely I stopped, and went back to having dreams about my entire family murdering me and eating my limbs for survival. You know, normal dreams. If you've ever astral projected, don't be afraid to explore and float around, but remember, if it starts to get out of hand, do not continue it. I think Gary Busey and Shaq might still be out there floating around, while some mentally challenged demons are taking over their bodies. Maybe Britney Spears is a projector. Wow, now everything makes sense. Just a pretty face. As a young boy going through puberty, there's a lot of things you hope people notice about you. Your newly grown leg hair, your barely there mustache, and most of all, your deepening man voice. The last thing I would do every night before I fell asleep was pray to God that I would wake up with at least one of those three things. Okay, that's a lie. The last thing I did every night before I went to sleep was violently hump my bed. I also used to pray that I would one day experience an orgasm. When you're a kid, you don't really have a release. You just have the urge to hump every object in your house. Sometimes even food. Am I going too far? Let me get back on track, and also away from discussing boy penis. I'm guessing there are legal ramifications for talking about that in a book. Anyways, every morning I would wake up the same. No leg hair, no mustache, and definitely not a deep voice. But the worst trait I had was something no boy wants. I had a pretty face. Now, I don't want this to sound cocky. I really did have a beautiful face. It was plump and round in all the right places. My cheekbones were high and sat perfectly under my Coke bottle glasses, creating a cute little crease when I smiled. My lips were soft and shiny. My eyelashes were literally 3 inches long and made an audible flapping sound when I blinked, like a fairy flying through the clouds. I'm still shocked and slightly offended that I was never molested. Even though my face was pretty, I didn't have a haircut to match. It looked like I had gone to Supercuts and asked, "Who here is suicidal and wants to leave the world with one last fuck you?" It was as if someone put headshots of all the lesbians in Hollywood into a computer system and had all their hairstyles morphed into one super mega lesbian haircut. If it was physically possible for Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen DeGeneres to breed, they would have popped out me. Because I looked so much like a woman, I tried really hard to dress like a man. I wore big flannel shirts, baseball hats, and cargo shorts with lots of pockets. But it only made it worse. I didn't look like a man. I just looked like a really butch lesbian. I looked like the giver in the relationship, if you know what I mean. I wore the pants and I brought home the bacon. At our lesbian wedding, I put the ring on her finger and led our first dance. Which, side note, I went to a wedding recently and the first dance was to Elton John's The Last Song. The whole time, all I could think was, isn't this song about AIDS? Bold choice. But it wasn't just my looks that made me a little woman. It was my voice. I had the voice of a 1940s Hollywood darling. Every time I opened my mouth, my grandmother would tell me how much I reminded her of Judy Garland. When a telemarketer would call, they would always start with, "How are you today, ma'am?" This made it very easy for me to hang up on them, guilt-free, so for that I'm grateful. But what was worse than my voice and my womanly exterior was the fact that my best friend was my mother. So not only did I look and sound like a chick, but all my interests were of the female persuasion. Joanne Craft Store on a Saturday? You ain't gotta ask me twice. My mom and I would drive around the city for hours, blaring Paula Abdul, and talk about how much my father didn't understand us. We would go get fro-yo with extra toppings because it was our cheat day and because we deserved it. I even remember going to a lingerie shop to help her find something for her anniversary. She wanted something sassy yet functional, and nothing that screamed, "I'm willing to try anal." That last part I just assumed because she never wanted anything with butt fringe. Sometimes we would refer to ourselves as Thelma and Louise. Looking back, I realize how unhealthy and disturbing that is, but back then it was great. I loved spending hours watching chick flicks and braiding my mom's hair. And don't get me started on how good I was at balling melons. I was the melon balling queen. If my mom had died, I think I would have been able to replace her pretty easily. I mean, having sex with my father would have been really weird, but I'm sure I could have adjusted. Everything was great until one day my whole mama's boy world came crashing down. It was a really hot day and my boy titties were dripping. I was lying on the couch with a Weight Watchers ice cream bar, enjoying everything Montel Williams had to offer. Usually it was just rants about MS, but sometimes he'd have a psychic come on and tell people that their lost children were dead, and that was pretty interesting. My mom walked into the kitchen, tying her huge red hair into a bun, and opened the refrigerator to get a cold breeze. She put her ass against the vegetable drawer and moaned like a dog getting its back scratched in all the right places. We couldn't afford air conditioning, so it was up to us to find our own source of cold air. We had to get really creative. One time, I put my underwear in the freezer and then wore them the next day. I still blame that incident for why my flaccid penis is so shriveled to this day. "Let's get out of here," my mom said as she wrung the sweat out of her tumbleweed-like hair. "To the movies? We kind of already saw Titanic 8 times. I don't think I can handle that kind of emotional distress again." I had already cried all day because I found out Weight Watchers had just changed their point system and it no longer included free foods. Those Nazi assholes. "No, let's go to the beach," my mom squealed. My body froze. The beach was not a happy place for me. There was way too many variables that made it uncomfortable. Everyone was half-naked. Homeless couples kissed each other in the shade. There was bird shit everywhere. And worst of all, my skin would burn instantly. It was like putting a wrapped ding-dong in the microwave. Wait, is that reference too fat for the general public? Okay, ding-dongs have a foil wrapping that makes them flammable when put in microwaves. Sorry for expecting you to know that. We packed up our stuff and got into the car. Even though I hated the beach, at least I knew there would be a breeze, and it was much better than melting in my shitty apartment. As we got closer, we started looking at all the cool beach houses and talked about how awesome it would be to live there one day. We were lesbians planning out our lives together. One day we would have a house on the sand, a big golden retriever, and a themed room. You know, like a reading room that looked like a jungle, or a scrapbooking room that had lots of pictures of babies in weird costumes everywhere. Something classy and tasteful. We pulled up to the parking lot and found a spot right away. We were always really lucky when it came to that stuff. My mom would say, "God is with us!" And I would always think, shouldn't God be helping all those big-stomached children in Africa instead of helping us get parking spots? But hey, a spot's a spot. We got our stuff out of the trunk and lugged it to a nice area on the sand, right in between a trash can with cum dumpster spray painted on it, and a family of 20 celebrating somebody's cumpleaños. We lay down on our shared towel, and I started rubbing her down with suntan lotion. Not in a creepy way, she just couldn't reach her back. Also, I have a really soothing touch. It's one of my many gifts. That, and I can tell someone they have a booger hanging out of their nose just by looking at them a certain way. We laughed the afternoon away and ate massive amounts of Otter Pops. It was the perfect summer day. And then it was ruined by one dumb visor-wearing bitch with a chest sunburn and spider veins. She walked by with her husband and their ugly dog and said,
"I don't have a problem with lesbians. I just don't want to look at them."
My heart sank. I don't know what hurt more, the fact that she was obviously a homophobe, or the fact that she thought I was a woman. Not a little girl, a full-blown woman. I was only 12. Sure, I had a pretty face and some perky breasts, but wasn't it obvious that I was a child? My mom pretended she didn't hear it and changed the subject. "Hey, you know Oreo is coming out with a new flavor this month? I think it's creamsicle." "No, Mom. You can't make me forget what just happened. Not even if Oreo came out with something that sounds revolutionary and fucking delicious. I will not just sit here and ignore what that bitch said." I looked at my mom. Do people really think I'm a girl? My mom's silence told me everything I needed to know. The next year of my life was hell. I was called ma'am everywhere I went. I wouldn't even set foot in a Sizzler because I was constantly mistaken for a waitress. I tried everything I could to be more manly. I shaved my hairless face, thinking maybe that would speed up my 5 o'clock shadow process. Instead, that just gave me lots of face cuts and a mental scar after I found out I was using my mom's everything razor. I tried stuffing my crotch with socks, but that just looked like I had a fat vagina. I asked my older brother for advice, and he said, "Just wait it out. One day you'll wake up and look in the mirror and see a man, I promise." So I waited. Every morning for the next year, I would run to the mirror to see if anything had changed. Besides the fact that I was getting taller and fatter, I didn't see much difference. But then one night, shortly after my 13th birthday, I took a trip to PetSmart with my mom. As we were checking out, the man at the register handed me our bag and said words that I had never heard before. Words I had waited for my entire life. Words that seemed so stupid to the average person, but to me meant so much. He said, "Have a nice night, sir." Sir! He called me sir! I was so overwhelmed with emotion. I started crying and I grabbed my mother for a hug. He had no idea what was going on and I'm sure he thought I had some kind of disorder, but I didn't care. This was my moment and I was taking it. And that night when my mom and I went out for froyo, it wasn't just because it was our cheat day. I really did feel like I deserved it. From that day forward, I was a man. Not just on the inside, but on the outside as well. Thank you, random PetSmart cashier. You changed my life. My leg twin. You know how you walk around the city and stare at everyone's bodies and compare theirs to your own? No, just me? Well, it's a habit I picked up when I was around 11 years old and already fixated on my weight. It probably didn't help that I went to my first Weight Watchers meeting when I was 10, but that's besides the point. Walking around school, I would stare at every guy's body and wonder what he looked like naked. It wasn't a sexual thing. It was more of a, I wonder if they have that weird fold of fat above their privates too, type of thing. I always felt like I had a bizarre body that was a scientific anomaly. I had the face and arms of a thin person, but the stomach and legs of someone who bled marshmallow fluff and Nutella. It was kind of like I was an actor sitting in my trailer halfway out of my fat suit. They had taken off the face prosthetics, but I still had on the bodysuit. My brother was a total opposite. He had the shape and coloring of a carrot. I was never jealous of his red hair, but I would have made a deal with Satan to get a body like his. I couldn't imagine what it would feel like to pick up a pair of pants at the store and not have to make adjustments to the waistline with a steak knife and scissors when I got home. And by the way, a 4X shirt isn't that much different from a 3X shirt, so don't waste your money on that extra X. It's a scam, and it's sad that I know that. The fixation with my weird body didn't go away when I lost weight. In fact, it got worse. I still, to this day, walk around checking out other dudes' bodies and comparing them to my own. On my first date with a girl, she noticed that I was checking out guys in the restaurant and started getting suspicious. That, mixed with my haircut, 4 coatings of high-gloss chapstick, and skinny jeans with decorative fading, did not help my case. I tried to explain to her that I wasn't checking out their packages. I was merely checking out the rest of them and doing their measurements in my head. This didn't go over too well, and dinner ended early. But it gave me an excuse to go home and watch an extra hour of My 600-Pound Life on my DVR, so it all worked out. One day a few years back, I was contemplating whether or not I should brush my teeth, but instead I decided to watch 12 hours of children's television. I have a sick obsession with children's television. I don't know if it's because I enjoy terrible jokes and loud fart sound effects, or... Actually, yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. That explains my humor perfectly. Mystery solved. Anyways, I was about 8 hours into the season of some terrible Disney show when I noticed that one of the guest stars had my legs. They were chubby, wide at the hips, and shaped like a pork chop. I paused my TV and stared at it for a good 10 minutes. I had never seen a guy with my legs before. I had seen plenty of 5 months pregnant ladies with my legs, but never a man. He had a soft middle like me, and his body was so disproportionate that it made me feel like I had a long-lost twin. I always wondered if that birthmark on my ass was from a twin separation surgery. Mom always said it was a kiss from an angel. That lying cunt. I knew I had a twin, and it was my mission to find him. So I did what any sane 23-year-old man would do. I looked him up on IMDb, then found him on Twitter, then tweeted him till he followed me so I could direct message him to set up a time to meet up. Yep, totally sane. 2 days later, I woke up to a Twitter notification on my phone. He followed me back. Score. I tried to think of some small talk that would make it seem like I had just, you know, stumbled across his Twitter and decided to follow him. I didn't want to tell him the truth because something told me, "You're my fat leg twin," wouldn't go over too well. After a few small talk conversations, he asked me if I wanted to hang out. My heart stopped. I felt like a 12-year-old girl getting asked out by my biggest crush, except I wasn't sexually interested in him. I was just interested in his pork chop thighs. So I told him that I was pretty busy, but I could fit him in my schedule. I like to play hard to get with my leg twin. He gave me a time and location, and it was on and cracking. Same time next day, I was going to see my other legs in person. I couldn't wait. I prayed to God that it would be 1,000 degrees so he would show up in shorts. I didn't know what I would do if his legs were chubby and hairy like mine. I thought I would actually have a full-on mental breakdown. The feeling of joy would overtake my body and my fat legs would explode. The next day I pulled up to a coffee shop where we were going to meet at, and I waited in my car. I got there a little early because I wanted to see him walk in. I wanted to see those legs in motion. I got a text from him saying he was running a little late. I told him not to worry about it and that I was running late too. Lies. I had been there for almost 30 minutes in anticipation for this epic moment. I started to get nervous. The reality of what was happening hit me. What if he walked up to the coffee shop and his legs were skinny? Would I take off? It started feeling like a Plenty of Fish date. I was already planning my escape. And as I was planning, I looked out of the window and I saw them. They were standing right in front of the coffee shop, thick, sausage ginger tight pants, and beautiful. They even look fatter in person, just like mine. I started sweating. This was it, the big moment. I was ready. I hopped out of my car and walked up to him. I was hoping that maybe he would look at my legs and notice that we were leg twins. I tried to even mimic his walk so he would get some kind of leg deja vu. Unfortunately, he wasn't as creepy and body-obsessed as me, so he didn't look below my face.
Hey, Shane.
Hey.
This is so weird. I've been watching you online for a while now.
I've been watching you, too.
Really? On what?
Your Disney show.
Aren't you 23? Who wants coffee?
I walked him into the cafe and found us a table. As we walked over, I stared at him from behind. He didn't just have my legs. He had my entire body. This was a miracle. We sat down and made small talk. I don't remember anything we talked about because I was staring at his chest the entire time. I could see his lopsided nipples poking through his exercise shirt, and all I could think was, I wonder if they have black spots around the areolas too. I started undressing him in my head, and I'm going to be honest, it got super creepy. Once again, this wasn't a homoerotic experience. It was more of a unwrapping gifts on Christmas Eve experience. I just wanted to rip off all his clothes and rub my twin body against his and take a bunch of selfies. A waitress walked over and asked for our order. I was hoping to God that he would order the same thing as me, just to make this man date even more magical. But what happened was shocking and a sign of things to come.
What would you boys like today?
Oh, I'll take a side of fries, extra ranch, please, and a Diet Coke with a cherry in it.
How old are you, 10?
Annie watches a Disney Channel, said my leg twin.
He must be the slow brother.
She thought we were brothers. Perfect.
And what would you like, baby?
Can I get a grilled chicken breast, no oil, no butter, and no sauce?
Of course. Diet Coke, too?
Oh, God, no. That stuff will kill you.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no. This has just taken a turn. We were not brothers. We weren't even in the same forest of family trees. We probably weren't even going to be friends. The waitress walked away, and I stared at him in silence for a few moments. I didn't know what to say. If he ate that healthy, then how in God's name did he have my body? He must have started on some new diet to shed the puffiness.
So, you want a diet? No way. I don't consider it a diet. More of a lifestyle.
Who the fuck is this? This is not my leg twin.
Oh, cool. So, you always eating like that?
Oh, yeah. Your body's a temple, you know. Gotta keep it clean.
Right. Temple.
You used to be fat, right?
Yeah, how did you know that?
You made a video about it. And you're always retweeting pictures of food porn. It's actually sad sometimes. You retweeted a picture of raw cookie dough last night at 3 a.m.
Yeah, it was a tough day.
You should come to work out with me sometime.
Work out? Okay, there is no way that this soft, puffy body dude works out. Unless he worked out and then did a keg stand for 12 hours immediately afterward.
Oh, yeah, maybe. You go often?
Oh, yeah, every day. There's nothing I love more than sweating so much that I could wring out my shirt and fill up a Gatorade bottle with it.
Okay, I had to agree with him on that. Except replace sweat with pee and replace Gatorade bottle with Diet Coke bottle. I didn't need that wide of a mouth.
Oh, God, you ever get an itch on your back that you just can't reach?
And this is the moment where all my dreams came crashing down. As he reached his arm to scratch his lower back, his shirt lifted up and revealed something that I did not see coming. A motherfucking six-pack. This guy wasn't soft. This guy was hard. Harder than a priest during a baptism. Harder than the dad on Seventh Heaven during the Ruthie Rides a Horse episode. How does a body so fit look so soft in clothing? Why does my body look like shit in clothing and naked? I had so many questions flying around my head, I started seeing stars.
I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick. Be right back.
As he got up to leave, I stared at his legs, and I realized that he didn't have chubby legs. He had thick legs. There's a huge difference. His thighs were thick because they were so ripped.
He could have crushed a watermelon with those pork chop thighs. I instantly started feeling sick to my stomach. I had built up this man in my head to be my clone, and instead he was just a better version of me. A better version of me with more credits on his IMDb page. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not a fat guy, and I don't think I am. But I'm definitely a guy who should probably lift more weights and should not have ranch dressing with every meal. I lost a bunch of weight, but I never really got toned. I just don't have the willpower to hit up the gym every day for 2 hours. And the idea of cutting candy out of my diet seems impossible. So because of that, I just have to live with the fact that I'll never be able to take off my shirt in public. And I'm okay with that. I started contemplating my escape plan. Should I just leave and pretend like I had been taken away by the rapture? Should I leave a note telling him that my family died and I had to go identify their bodies? I was desperate for a way out of this disaster. He walked back and sat down with a satisfied look on his face. I'm sure he had just taken a huge, healthy bowel movement. And here I was with IBS and a stomach full of ranch dressing that was sure to come out of my ass like I got bukkake'd at a gangbang. I ended the conversation, and I told him that I had a lot of work to do at home. And I wasn't lying. I had about 4 hours of standing in front of the mirror looking at my body in and out of clothes to look forward to. As we left, we decided sometime soon we were going to hang out again, but he didn't know the truth. I had already gotten what I wanted out of this relationship. I was ready to move on. I saw what he was working with and decided it wasn't for me. The last thing I needed was another friend who was comfortable taking their shirt off at the beach. So we went our separate ways and never spoke again. The entire situation showed me that I shouldn't be looking for a body twin. I shouldn't even be looking at myself that much, because nobody really cares about how I look except for me. I had this idea that when I walk around in public, everyone is judging me and comparing my body to theirs, when in reality, the only people who are doing that are me and maybe a few other mentally unstable people. All that Disney star wanted was to hang out, possibly start a friendship, but instead I shut him out of my life because I didn't want to be reminded of how fat I felt around him. Luckily, in the last few years, I've gotten over the constant need to check out other dudes' physiques, and hopefully one day, me and Disney Dude will cross paths again and get some oil-free, butter-free, fat-free chicken together. Until then, I will continue to lie on my bed, retweeting food porn, and watching television shows I'm criminally too old for. Shocktuber. 1 a.m. The sound of thousands of robotic birds chirping repeatedly filled my room. This could only mean one of two things. Either I was finally having that nervous breakdown my mother told me was hereditary, or my Twitter was blowing the fuck up. Well, I didn't have the urge to shave my head and jump out of my bedroom window, so it must have been the latter. When my Twitter blows up, my first thought is, oh my god, Lindsay Lohan died. Every morning when I wake up, I wonder if the number one trending topic in the world is going to be hashtag RIP Lindsay, right above hashtag she was so good in Mean Girls, what happened? I mean, not to sound morbid, but it's just a matter of time, right? I think we're all just waiting for it. We want her to make it through, but let's keep it real. TikTok. Anyways, my Twitter wasn't blowing up because of a former child star's death, or even because of another hurricane with a waitress name. It was blowing up because I was supposedly a racist. There's few words that actually offend me. Putting my life out on the internet for so long has made me numb to pretty much every criticism and insult. I got a comment on a video once that said, I bet your grandmother is looking up from hell crying because you're a stupid cock-sucking faggot with AIDS. And my first thought was, shouldn't AIDS be capitalized? So, not much bothers me. But when people say I'm racist, it really gets under my skin. My superior, perfect white skin. So you're probably wondering what set Twitter off. What set Twitter ablaze wasn't even something I had done, but something people assumed I had. It was a sketch on YouTube about Harriet Tubman making a sex tape, and it went viral after CNN got a hold of it. Because some of the actors in the video are actors I've used in some of my work, people assumed that I created it, which was completely untrue and really frustrated me. I would never do a video about Harriet Tubman making a sex tape. Cameras weren't even around back then. I take creative liberties in my sketches, but I don't want them to be completely inaccurate. As I scrolled through my timeline, I saw thousands of Shane Dawson is racist and Shane Dawson hates black people tweets. and each one was like a dagger in my heart. The angry mob started posting links to other videos I had done and pointing out every offensive joke I had ever made. They started creating a narrative that I was this secret KKK member who was out to brainwash the youth of America with my sick racist comedy, which is ridiculous. If I were trying to brainwash the youth of America, I would brainwash them into buying more merch. My merch doesn't really sell that well. It's unfortunate because it's good shit. But I digress. I tried to set the record straight and explain that I had nothing to do with the video, but that went unheard. The fire was too big, and no amount of explanation could help put it out, so I waited. It eventually blew over, and I went back to waiting for Lindsay Lohan to die. But this wasn't the first time I've been labeled a racist. My video has been controversial since I first started back in 2008. The, "Did he really just say that?" and "Whoa, too far, Shane," comments have been flooding my YouTube channel since the beginning. But I never set out to be some kind of shocktuber. I just made up that term, by the way. Feel free to use it. Pushing the envelope is something that I just do naturally, and I do it without trying. It's second nature to me, like riding a bike or making an audible sad sigh sound when I walk by a homeless person. I can't help it. My humor was created by my environment. Margaret Cho isn't considered a racist for making jokes about Asians and their stereotypes because it's what she grew up with. It's what she knew. And the same goes for me. I grew up in Long Beach, California, where we were famous for raising Snoop Dogg and having a lot of stabbings. All my jokes, all my characters, all my points of view as a comedian were created while living in that environment. I'm sure as I get older, I'll be influenced by new experiences, but for now, I still grab from that period of my life. My first time performing for an audience was in 10th grade. It was a sketch I wrote, and my drama teacher chose it to be performed in front of the entire 10th grade class. It was about a white kid who wanted to fit in with his black friends, so he tried everything he could to impress them. It was a sketch full of stereotypes, and to an all-white audience, it probably would have been received with crickets and uncomfortable silence. But to my diverse class, it was received with uproarious laughter and a standing ovation. And to get 10th graders to stand for anything is a huge victory. That day after the performance, one of my teachers, who was white, asked me if I thought the skit was racist. I was shocked. How could satire be considered racist? I hadn't said anything demeaning, I hadn't used any words that were hurtful, and I sure as hell hadn't said I was superior to anyone. Luckily, I had a friend stick up for me and risk getting detention to do so. My friend happened to be black. My friend said, "How was what he did racist?" My teacher replied, "He was showcasing stereotypes. He was encouraging people to laugh at African Americans in the way they act." "But some of us do act like that." "Well, that doesn't make it right." "No, it makes it relatable. I know people who act foolish and coon-like, and those people are ridiculous to me. Shane wasn't making fun of black people. He was making fun of a group of black people who act ridiculous." "Well, I disagree." "Misconstrued as racist," my friend responded strongly. "Well, you're not black. You don't understand what it feels like for white people to walk on eggshells around us, scared to say anything that could be misconstrued as racist, making us feel like we should be treated with kid gloves because we can't take the fact that our skin is a different color and some people don't like us. I like laughing at shit I relate to, and I like that a white person was doing it. It made me feel like more part of this society and less of an outcast." He sat down. Now, I know it sounds like I'm making that conversation up. It's too perfect and too well-crafted to be an actual conversation between a high school teacher and his student. But it really happened. And it changed the way I thought about comedy. There's these things that people are afraid to joke about. There's things that are taboo. And I don't ever want to be afraid to go into that territory. Everybody just wants to relate and feel like a comedian gets them. I think it's the reason I have such a diverse audience on YouTube. Because I truly relate to people who feel like they don't belong. I might be a white guy who hasn't been ignored by a taxi driver, but that doesn't mean I don't know what it's like for people to treat me like shit for being different. I don't ever make jokes that are hateful for no reason. If one of my characters says something completely over the line and offensive, the audience isn't meant to be laughing with them. They're meant to be laughing at them, laughing at how stupid the character is for saying something so horrible. Because there are people in this world who say horrible, stupid shit. And instead of sitting back and taking it, I like to make fun of them. Now, I can't control if some racist person watches my video and laughs for the wrong reason. That would be like not making horror movies because you don't want to give a serial killer something to jerk off to. Every viewer has a different experience while watching something. All I can hope is that my audience gets it and enjoys it. 1 week later, 1 a.m. I hear the sound of thousands of robotic birds chirping repeatedly in my room. I rush to the computer. Has it finally happened? Is this it? I opened up the browser and checked the trending topics of the day. Nope, she's still alive. Just another hurricane with a waitress's name. Prom. A wise person once said, "Prom is only for whores and for the guys who want to fuck them." My grandma was a smart woman. Don't even get me started on her thoughts on quinceañeras. I'll give you a hint. They're horribly offensive and completely accurate. Anyways, there are so many people who will tell you that prom is a magical night, full of romance and stomach butterflies, but they forget to tell you about the pain and embarrassment that comes along with it. My prom experience was like watching a deadly car crash in slow motion. Heads were flying through the windshield. Airbags were breaking people's skulls. And there was even a cute little puppy smashed up against the hood getting sucked into the grill. It wasn't just that the big night was a disaster. It was the entire lead-up. So I'll take you through it slowly so you can get the whole sad, bloody picture. If you have any sharp objects or pill bottles nearby, hide them in a cupboard. This entire experience might throw you into a suicidal state. One day during my thrilling senior year, I was hanging out with my group of friends at lunch talking about all the exciting things going on in our lives. It was always a very short conversation. You know how every school has what's commonly known as the crazy tree? Well, if you don't know what I'm talking about, let me explain. During lunchtime, all the cliques hung out in their designated sectors outside. Nobody hung out in the cafeteria because that's where the school food was, and being within 10 feet of it would probably give you a stomach flu. I don't know who decided the sectors. I feel like it was a natural instinct sort of thing. For example, I would never have even dreamed of walking up to the benches by the school side gate. That was an area filled with jocks who were getting pocket hand jobs from their cheerleader girlfriends. Just walking by, your nose would fill with the smell of splooge and hot Cheetos. The rest of the sectors were taken up by the nerds, the Asians, the black kids, the Mexicans, and the pregnant girls. Finally, on the far side of the quad, right next to the girls' bathroom, was a large tree that looked like it had been ripped out of some depressing Tim Burton movie. It created more shade than all the queens on RuPaul's Drag Race combined. If that tree could have spoken, it would have said, "Dear God, cut me the fuck down, I hate my life." It would probably have asked that one fat girl to stop practicing her makeout skills on it, but that fat girl would never have stopped. That fat girl was me, and that tree marked my sector. My group was made up of misfits, and not in the fun comic book way, more in the rejected scraps of meat that become baloney way. I would say I was the leader of the group, but that implies that we did stuff that required leading. We more or less just stood around and shared a family-sized bag of Doritos. First, there was Tara, who I told you about earlier, although she usually wasn't around during lunchtime because she was in the parking lot hanging out with her guy friends. Then there was a 4-foot-tall stoner named Pam, who had an undiagnosed case of Tourette syndrome. Her vocabulary was limited to cuss words that would somehow combine to make full sentences. "Hey, Pam, what's up?" "Pfft, fucking bullshit, bitch. Motherfucker's dumbass fucking with that bitch again. Shit." She was a true linguist. Then there was Brandon, who was a loose cannon with slight serial killer tendencies. One time he brought a taser gun to school and gave Pam $5 to let him try it on her. I don't remember exactly how it went down, but I do remember she almost died. Finally, there was my lesbian friend and future prom date, Kelly. Did I mention she was a lesbian? Yeah, we'll get to that later. Kelly was a unique girl. Her wardrobe was a mix of Kenny from South Park and that guy who shot all his classmates in that one news story. There was a lot of camo, a lot of cargo pockets, and lots of stickers on her backpack that said, "Aliens are better than people." She was a true freak, which is why we had so much in common. Kelly and I spent pretty much every weekend together. We would eat mass amounts of junk food, drive around blaring Britney Spears and tell no one. And most important, we would make sketch comedy videos. some of my first videos I ever posted on YouTube were the ones that we created together. We had a pretty great working relationship. I would hold the camera and force her to do whatever I wanted her to in front of it. In one video, she gave herself a fake abortion and then smeared the blood on her face. Trust me, it's funnier than it sounds. So it was the week before prom and everyone was planning out their epic romantic night of dancing and sex. Those of us under the crazy tree were more focused on who was going to get to pour the crumbs at the bottom of the Dorito bag down their throat that day. Then the unthinkable happened. I was asked to prom. Now, before you start imagining some amazing, beautiful moment when a girl walked up to me with a hand-painted sign that said, "Prom?" question mark, and flower petals falling from the sky, let me share with you the bleak reality. Get ready for this. Once again, hide the sharp objects. My friend Kelly walked over and said to me,
"Hey Shane, can I talk to you over here for a second?"
By the trash can on fish stick day? Wow, this must be important.
So, do you want to go to prom with me?
What?
I'm serious.
You're a lesbian. Like a big lesbian. You constantly have new scabs on your forearms.
What does that have to do with me being a lesbian?
I don't know, but it doesn't scream, "I like dick."
You wouldn't have to pay for it.
Why? Is this a make-a-wish thing? Did the principal put you up to this? I keep telling him that I'm not dying. I just have that dying kid resting face.
No, my dad is going to pay.
Why? He doesn't even like paying for shampoo. I mean, your hair has more grease dripping from it than a deep fryer at the county fair.
You really know how to make a girl feel pretty.
Okay, what's going on? For reals.
My dad wants me to go with a guy, so he said he would pay for you to go with me.
Yikes. That's like the plot of some terrible 90s movie. Does it end with you realizing you're not gay and you're actually in love with me?
I'm really glad we're next to a trash can right now. I can feel chunks rising.
So, if I say no, then what?
Then I don't get to go to prom.
Do you really want to go? A bunch of straight people fondling each other doesn't really sound like your kind of thing.
I know it's dumb, but I really want to go. I mean, I've only worn a dress once, and that was at my grandma's funeral a few years ago, and I didn't even get to enjoy it. I had to change into something that would cover up my boobs while I helped carry the casket.
Yeah, funerals are tough.
So, what do you say? For me?
This was a hard decision. I didn't know what would hurt more, letting my friend down or going to prom with a lesbian. It was like choosing between lice and crabs. One was contagious, and the other one would only affect me. I also don't quite know how I felt about her dad pimping me out like I was some fat hooker. The sad part is what she said to sweeten the deal.
My dad said he would pay for our Denny's meal.
The even sadder part was my reaction. I'm fucking in! So it was settled. Kelly was all mine for the night, at the low cost of prom tickets, my tux, and a Denny's meal. The night of the prom arrived in a flash. Before I knew it, it was time for me to lie on the floor and have my mom help me zip up my tuxedo pants. As I put on my suit and looked in the mirror, I couldn't help but notice how much I look like a lesbian myself. Maybe it was meant to be. Maybe Kelly and I would be the hottest lesbian couple at the prom. Although we did have some pretty stiff competition. There were these two Cambodian girls who DJ'd at birthday parties on the weekends. Ooh, they were pretty cool. So I hopped in my never-been-washed car and headed over to my date's house. I picked up that wrist flower thing on the way there, and then I accidentally sat on it. To say it was destroyed would be an understatement. I did to that wrist flower thing what God did to the dinosaurs.
Extinct!
As I pulled up to Kelly's house, I started getting nervous. I'm not sure why, because it wasn't really a date. But there was something about the suit, the romantic song playing on the radio, and the crushed corsage in between my ass cheeks that made my stomach get butterflies. Maybe this is what all those people are talking about. Maybe this night was going to be magical. Or maybe I was just having bubble guts from the sheet cake and refried beans I ate the night before. I got to the front door, and before I could knock, it swung open, and I was hit with a storm of flashing lights. It was a photographer who her dad had hired, and he was not shy about getting all the shots he wanted. There were so many flashes I started to wonder if I was having a stroke, which was totally possible once again considering the sheet cake and refried beans. After the lights stopped flashing, I looked up and saw Kelly standing in front of me, looking like a completely different person. She wasn't the camouflaged, metal-tipped hiking boot-wearing girl I was used to. She was a beautiful princess, with a dress perfectly fitted and a hairstyle ripped right out of 17 magazine. No wonder she had to change her outfit at that funeral. She was probably giving the priest a chub. Well, probably not the priest, but maybe the altar boys. Wow, Kelly, you look great.
I kind of feel stupid.
Why? You look amazing. You look like a child prostitute, but happy about it.
That's what I was going for.
Her dad walked out with a proud look on his face. He asked us to pose for a picture together, and we took a few hundred. I'm sure I looked terrible in every one, but it didn't matter. She was pretty enough for the both of us. Her dad walked over to me and gave me that take care of her speech, which was incredibly uncomfortable, but also kind of sweet. I'm sure most people listening to this are thinking he's an asshole for not letting his daughter go to prom with a girl, but this was 2006. I know that doesn't feel like that long ago, but it really was. There weren't that many openly gay kids at school, and the only openly gay guy in Hollywood was Lance Bass, so there weren't that many people to look up to. It's not like nowadays where you throw a rock into a crowd and you hit 10 gay dudes and 5 lesbians. Back in 06, there was only a LGB club at school. Now there's an LGBTGIA community. It's pretty amazing what 8 years can do. So our night was off to a good start, and it was time to make it even better. We met up with some of our Crazy Tree friends at a restaurant, just like they do in all those teenager movies. I imagined us all sitting around in our fancy outfits, talking about the sexual adventures we were excited about having that night. But instead, what I got was me and a few friends sharing a plate of tater chows at a Denny's next to a free clinic. If you don't know what tater chows are, they were a limited option at Denny's in 2006. Instead of chips, they used tater tots for their nachos, and they were as brutal on your anus as you'd expect. So as we sat around stuffing our faces with something that only homeless people should be eating out of a trash can, one of my friends grabbed my leg with the strength of an ape. I'm not going to reveal my friend's name because what happened next should never happen to anyone ever, especially at Denny's. My nameless friend whispered, "Shane, I have a problem." "What's wrong?" "I got a visitor, if you know what I mean." "Oh, God. Is it your cousin Billy? Is he staying with you again?" "Oh, he's the worst. You know every TV show theme song. We get it." "No, I have a visitor, you know where?" As she pointed to her vagina, it took about 5.5 seconds for it all to sink in. My eyes bulged out of my head, and I made a loud gasp that was heard by the entire restaurant. What can I say? I'm smooth. Kelly looked up confused.
"What's going on?"
"Huh? Oh, nothing. Tot down the wrong pipe."
"You breathed in a tater tot?"
"Are you really surprised?"
"I guess not."
Everyone went back to their tots, and I turned to my nameless friend. Did I mention she was wearing a white dress? The blood on her dress was as obvious as a skid mark on a pair of tidy whities, and trust me, I know my skid mark tidy whities. "What are you going to do?"
"I don't know. Can you cover for me?"
"Like, spill ketchup all over you so nobody sees the blood?"
"How did you come up with that plan so fast?"
"When I was a kid, I used to pee my pants, so my brother would dump soda on my lap to hide it."
"Wow, that's so sweet and incredibly sad."
"So do you want me to do it?"
"I don't know. Isn't that worse? Smelling like ketchup at prom and having a huge stain on my dress? Maybe I can just pretend the blood is ketchup."
"Ketchup isn't that dark, unless it's organic. And trust me, people know Denny's does not do organic."
"Okay, fine. Just do it."
So I took a deep breath and then casually squirted a huge pile of ketchup all over her lap. I played it off like my hand had slipped, and everyone bought it. Kelly freaked out.
"Shane, oh my God, what the fuck?"
"Crap, I'm so sorry. I was so excited about the tots that I lost control of my motor skills."
My nameless friend got up.
"Oh, it's okay. I'm just going to go to the bathroom and try to clean it off."
"Oh, here, I'll come help you."
Her and Kelly went off, and everyone else at the table stared at me in confusion. I'm guessing they knew something was up, but then our milkshakes came to the table, so they were quickly distracted. After that bloody ordeal, it was time to head to the prom. We got to the hotel where the party was happening, and it was way fancier than I'd expected. There were hanging lights, decorations, and even plastic cups instead of paper ones.
It was a huge step up from the 9th grade Sadie Hawkins dance I had gone to. Although I didn't technically go to that dance. I was on student council, so I stood outside by the back entrance and made sure nobody got raped. Kelly and I walked into the party and took a big look around. It was pretty magical. Then right away a group